I want to thank everyone again very much for coming, and especially the entire Aronoff family and Joe's Chavrusa, Aryeh Strobel, who learned together with Joe some of this and helped put this together. And again, a very big thank you to Seth and to Emily for hosting all of us. So tonight's topic is the question of why is Tisha B'Av a holiday? The Gemara says that Tisha B'Av, which we will experience next Tuesday, a time of kinos, of lamentations, of sorrow and crying and, you know, personal affliction to, you know, take on some of the afflictions that we have on Yom Kippur. The Gemara says Tisha B'Av Ikri Moed. Tisha B'Av is called a holiday, as in the verse in Eicha, Kara Alai Moed Lishbor Bachurai. He declared upon me a holiday to smash my young individuals. That God said, this is a day that is set aside. It's a dedicated day of God, unfortunately, for tragedy. Think of all the tragedies that happened on Tisha B'Av. We lost the first Beit HaMikdash, the second Beit HaMikdash, the Spanish Inquisition, the expulsion from Spain was on Tisha B'Av. World War I began on Tisha B'Av. We've had so many tragedies on the 9th of Av. The spies came back with the negative report. Beitar was overrun and destroyed. The Bar Kokhba revolt. The city of Jerusalem was plowed over and turned into a field. All of these terrible tragedies on Tisha B'Av. The verse says in Eicha, Kara Olai Moed Lishbor Bachurai. He called upon me a holiday, a set time, a moed, a time of meeting, to smash my young individuals. So the Gemara says, so you see that Tisha B'Av is called a moed, it's called a holiday. And that's why the poskim tell us that according to halacha, we don't say tachanun on Tisha B'Av. We don't have the added prayers that we usually add to Shmona Esrei of begging God for forgiveness and added supplications. Because Tisha B'Av is a moed, it's a holiday. We wouldn't say a Kel Mole Rachamim on Tisha B'Av. We wouldn't say a Tzidkas Chatzedek on Tisha B'Av. Or if Shabbos is the day before Tisha B'Av, we wouldn't say Tzidkas Chatzedek at Mincha. Tisha B'Av is a holiday. Kara Alai Moed Lishbor Bachurai. And it's a very difficult concept because Tisha B'Av is such a sad day. It's the ultimate day of mourning and sadness and tragedy. How is it the holiday? You know, I have at my home a collection of writings of Rav Soloveitchik, different letters. So apparently in the early 50s, there was a move to try to incorporate into the Seder night a whole prayer for the victims of the Holocaust, to say a Kel Mole Rachamim, and to say a whole passage during Seder night, during the Haggadah. And they asked Rabbi Soloveitchik to endorse the prayer. And Rabbi Soloveitchik writes that he absolutely will not endorse the prayer. He thinks it's a terrible idea. He says, Seder night is a celebratory night. It's one of the happiest days of the year, if not the happiest day of the year. The verse says in Isaiah about the future, Hashir yiyeh lachem kelel eskadesh chag. You're going to have a song like the night of the holiday, the night of the Seder. So how could in time of such celebration instead suddenly move to mourning and sadness? It's completely inconsistent with what the theme of the night is. He said, but if you want to know what's the time to mourn, it's Tisha B'Av. The 9th of Av, that's the time to mourn. That's the time to add more prayers and more discussions about further Jewish tragedies. Tisha B'Av's the time of mourning. It's the day of sadness. So if it's the day of sadness, how could it be a Mo'ed? How could it be a holiday? It's the day that we lost the Batei Mikdash. We don't have a Judaism now. We're just going through the motions. But the real experience was to have a Beis HaMikdash with miracles and with the service of korbanot, of sacrifices. This is the day when we lost it all. This is a holiday. This is a day of not saying Tachanun, a day of no Tzidkas Chatzedek. How could we understand this? So one idea that's in a lot of holy Hasidic books, Bnei Yisachar and other holy books, is that Tisha B'Av, as difficult as a day as it is, it's also the day when Mashiach will be born. Mashiach is going to be born on Tisha B'Av. In fact, there was a very unfortunate Jewish experience with a false Mashiach by the name of Shabtai Tzvi. Shabtai Tzvi was a Jew who was, you know, probably manic depressive or bipolar. He had all sorts of crazy mood swings, but he was very brilliant, very charismatic, very knowledgeable in the Kabbalah of the Ari, the deep mysticism. And he succeeded to gather around him followers and to convince them that he was Mashiach, that he was the ultimate Redeemer. And then based on him claiming that he was Mashiach, he would do all sorts of terrible sins and say, well, it's allowed for Mashiach. And so the rabbis of Turkey basically ran him out of the country. He went down to Egypt, to Alexandria. Their people were less knowledgeable. He was accepted there. He then went to Palestine. He got followers from the land of Israel. He came back to Turkey, very popular, very strong, so strong that the rabbis couldn't do anything about him anymore. But he was arrested by the Turkish Sultan. He was put on an island in a jail and eventually made to make a difficult choice, either to convert to Islam or to be killed, and he chose to convert to Islam. Shabtai Tzvi, why was he named Shabtai? Because he was born on a Shabbos that was the ninth of Av. That's why he was named Shabtai. And he used this tradition that Mashiach is born on Tisha B'Av to help convince people, look, I was born on Tisha B'Av. It was a Tisha B'Av which was a Shabbos. I'm the Redeemer. I'm the one you've all been waiting for. So the Hasidim say that on the 9th of Av, on Tisha B'Av, Mashiach is born. And since Mashiach is born, that's the time he will be born, that's what makes it into a celebratory time, a holiday, a Mo'ed. Because even though externally we see terrible tragedies, the loss of the Beit HaMikdash, further tragedies, but internally, when all of these things are going on, deep down, there's a great good that's happening. That is the birth of Mashiach. The Mashiach was born on Tisha B'Av, and that's a reason to celebrate. My teacher, Matl Zilber, he points out that Tisha B'Av, we always refer to it as Tisha B'Av, or Tes B'Av. The Tes in Av, in the month of Av, the letter Tes, the ninth day. The Gemara in Masechta Bava Kama says an amazing thing. Haroet Tes b'chalom. If a person has a dream, and in his dream he sees the letter Tes, it's a sign from God that Tov, good things are happening. If you see the letter Tes, it's a sign that Tov, good things are happening. Because the letter Tes is the first letter in the word Tov, in the word good. So the Gemara says, one second, but the letter Tes is also the first letter in words that aren't so good, like Tavu Ba'aretz She'areha, the gates of Jerusalem sank into the earth. That's not so good. That begins with the letter Tes. So how do you know when you see the letter Tes that good things are happening? Maybe some gates are going to sink, it's a tragedy, an earthquake's going to happen. So the Gemara answers, but the first time in the Torah, the letter Tes begins a word, it's the word Tov. On day one of creation, God created light. Vayar Elokim es haor kitov. God saw that the light was good. So since the first time the letter tes begins a word, it's the word tov, that's the real, essential, most definitional meaning of the letter tes. Tes begins the word tov. Sometimes is it used for other words? Yes, but the first time it's the word good. So that means what it's really all about is it's about the word good. Now, what happened to that light that God created on the first day? Rashi says that that light was hidden away because God made light on the first day, but only on the fourth day does he make the sun. So Rashi says the light of the first day was a spiritual light, a miraculous light, or a ganuz, a hidden light. Shegnazo HaKadosh Baruch Hu L'tzadikim L'asid Lavo. God hid it away, and it's hidden, and the righteous will get it in the world to come. In fact, the Zohar says that the letter Tes stands for Tuvcha Ganuz Begavach, your good that's hidden inside of you. There's a certain goodness that's hidden inside. That hidden goodness, that's represented by the letter Tes. So we have Tes Ba'av, the ninth of Av. Tes, right? You can just look at it. Tes Ba'alef Beis. Tes in the Aleph Beis. The Tes in the Aleph Beis is the hidden good. And what's the other point of this period? As we learned a few weeks ago, the 17th of Tammuz. 17 is the gematria of the word Tov, the word good. So Tes is the letter that begins the word Tov. And 17 actually is the gematria of the word Tov. Because these two dates, Tes Ba'av, the letter Tes in the Aleph Beis, and the 17th of Tammuz, are really hidden days of good. In the revealed way, they're unfortunate days, but in a hidden way, there is a deep good going on. I think I mentioned it a couple weeks ago. The Chassam Sofer points out that when the Jewish people come to Aaron HaKohen and they ask him to make the golden calf, he says, come back tomorrow. Chag LaHashem Machar. We're going to have a holiday for God tomorrow, which was a reference to the 17th of Tammuz. So the Ari HaKadosh asks, how could he say it's going to be a holiday for God tomorrow? It's the day of the golden calf, the day when the tablets were broken. It's not a holiday. So the Ari answers, if Aaron said it, it's true. In tomorrow, when Mashiach will come, the 17th of Tammuz will be a holiday. Says the Chassam Sofer, Rus was intimate and was impregnated by Boaz on the 17th of Tammuz. So if the 9th of Av is the holiday of the birth of Mashiach, when Mashiach will come, the 17th of Tammuz is going to be the holiday of the beginning of the beginning of Mashiach. Because Mashiach comes from King David. King David is a descendant of Boaz with Rus. And Boaz was together with Rus on the 17th of Tammuz. So the 17th of Tammuz will also be a holiday. That's why these are days of Tov, which is Ganuz, of a good which is hidden. So here's an amazing thing. If you take 9 and add 9 to 17, what's the gematria? 26, which is Yud Kei Vav Kei, Hashem's name. So the 9th of Av with the 17th of Tammuz together is really Hashem's name, Yud Kei Vav Kei. That's the hidden good that's hidden for the Jewish people. The prophet Zechariah, who was the prophet at the time of the beginning of the Second Temple, asks God, now that we're going to have a temple, should we still mourn all the fast days that mark the loss of the first temple? Should we mourn the 10th of Teves, the 17th of Tammuz, the 9th of Av? So God responds through an angel, not only shouldn't you mourn when you have a temple, but in the future as well, you don't mourn. And he said, Tzoma Revi'i, the fourth fast, V'tzoma Chamishi, the fifth fast, V'tzoma Shvi'i, the seventh fast, the Tzom Asiri, the tenth fast, Yiyeh LeBeis Yisrael, L'Sasar L'Simcha, will be for the Jewish people holidays and celebrations. So one second, the fourth fast is a reference to Tammuz, which is the fourth month, the 17th of Tammuz, because you have Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz. Tammuz is the fourth month. The fifth fast is a reference to the ninth of Av, which is in the fifth month. The seventh fast is a reference to the fast of Gedaliah, which is in the seventh month, the month of Tishrei. And the tenth month is a reference to Asara B'Teves, the tenth of Teves, which is on the tenth month. So if you take 5 and 4, what's 5 and 4 together? And 10 and 7? 17. So when the prophet is saying that these days are going to be transformed into days of Sason v'Simcha, he doesn't say the 9th of Av or the 17th of Tammuz. He says fast 4, fast 5, fast 7, fast 10, which also adds up to the same amounts of 9 and 17, because what it's teaching us is that when we talk about the transformation, finding the hidden good, really these are days of sadness, but hidden within them there's the good that they are preparing for Mashiach. So the Bnei Yisachar, Rav Hirshali Melech of Dinov, asked, how could it be that the 9th of Av is the day of the birth of Mashiach, and the 17th of Tammuz, the day of the hidden good, of the conception, of the beginning of the Davidic dynasty? How could it be? To bring down such great souls, it would have to be very exalted and holy times. It'd have to be some great holiness. But these are such sad periods. So Rav Hirshali Melech of Dinov, he gives a very powerful answer. He says, many times when you see a couple that are in love and that are close to each other, you don't see the affection. In fact, they made themselves not even consciously feel the affection. They're used to each other. They're accepting each other. To some degree, they take each other for granted. But if they're about to separate, he's about to go to the other side of the world for a 3-week business trip, she's about to go away for a lengthy period, she has to go, then there is a lot of feeling. Because at that moment of right before the separation, suddenly a person realizes, oh, I'm going to miss this, I'm going to miss that. There's all the longing, there's all the pathos, all the sense of what would be, what could be, how much I appreciate, how much I enjoy, and that arouses a tremendous attachment. Says the Bnei Yisachar, this is not just an observation of human nature, it's actually a halacha in the laws of Nida. The halacha is that husband is obligated to be intimate with his wife on a regular basis. That's called the mitzvah of Ona. However, we know that there is a certain time in the month when a woman expects her period to come. So when the period is expected, the husband and wife are not supposed to be intimate because she might become a nida. In fact, the 12-hour period before when the period is expected, the Ona Samuch Levesta, the 12-hour period before, also husband and wife shouldn't be intimate because she may start bleeding, so they're not supposed to be intimate. However, if the husband is about to go away on a big business trip, or if the wife is about to go away according to some poskim, then they have an obligation to be intimate with each other, even when it's Ona Samach Levesta, even the period when normally they're supposed to separate. Because the halacha assumes that when a husband's going to go away on a trip, there is an arousal of feeling, and because there's an arousal of feeling, that's when the husband is obligated to be intimate with his wife at the time of aroused feelings. Says the Bnei Yisachar, this could possibly explain a famous Gemara in the Sechet Yoma. The Gemara says in Tractate Yoma that when the enemies came into the Beit HaMikdash on Tisha B'Av, on the 9th of Av, they went into the Kodesh HaKodeshim, they went into the Holiest of Holies, and they saw in the Holiest of Holies Kruvim, the cherubs. And the cherubs, these statues of a male statue and a female statue with wings on top, like little angels, the cherubs were Me'urin Zebazeh, were so attached to each other, they were locked in the most intimate of embraces, literally interlocked within each other. So they grabbed the statues, and they walked out, and they said, look at the Jews, look at how lowly they are. They claim to be monotheists and to be away from idolatry. In their holiest of holies, they have statues which are, you know, engaged in the most vile of poses. That's what the enemies of the Jews said. This is a very strange Gemara, because the Gemara tells us in Baba Basra that the two cherubs, one looked like a little boy, one looked like a little girl with wings on their back. The two cherubs represent the relationship that God has with the Jewish people. So when the Jews fulfill His will, the cherubs look towards each other because God is loving the Jews and giving to us. But when, unfortunately, we don't do what we're supposed to do, the cherubs miraculously would turn away from each other. See, here the temple is being burnt. The enemies are coming and taking out the treasures of the temple. And now the cherubs are not just hugging each other, not just turned toward each other, but locked in the most intimate of embraces, Me'urin Zebazeh. How do we understand this? Says the Bnei Yisaschar, it's because God wanted to be so loving to us at the moment right before the separation. At the moment right before the separation, there is an arousal of tremendous longing and missing and wanting to be close. So because the temple's being destroyed, because we're about to go into exile, because we're about to be under the realities of God hiding His face and difficulties and tragedies and lack of open miracles, it's a moment of tremendous feeling. I'm going to miss you. I'm going to miss my time with you. So the Almighty at that moment reaches out with tremendous love, as in the halacha of Chayiv Adam Lifkot Es Ishto, Ona Achas Samach Levesta, Kodem Sheyotze LaDerech, before he's going to go out on a lengthy trip. And that's why it's a time of the birth of Mashiach. It's the time of the birth of Mashiach, because there's so much warmth and feeling and love that God has for us at these moments, that because it's a time of separation and because it's a time of sadness, that's what paradoxically also makes it a time of tremendous longing and missing. And that's what brings the soul of Mashiach into this world. That's what the Hasidim say is why Tisha B'Av is really a moed, a holiday. We find it within Eicha. In the middle of Eicha, in the middle of Lamentation, suddenly we have verses of God's love. Chaz de Hashem ki lo samnu, ki lo chalu rachamav. God's kindness will never end. It never gets exhausted. What do you mean? We're talking about Eicha Isa, Eicha Yashva Badad. We're talking about all the tragedies. But no, within these tragedies, there's an awareness that there's a tremendous underlying love. And that underlying love brings the birth of Mashiach into this world. That's what the Hasidim say. I want to share other explanations for why the 9th of Av is considered a holiday. These explanations come from Rav Moshe Shapiro of blessed memory, who passed away earlier this year. Rav Moshe Shapiro points out that traditionally the answer that everybody gives, why is Tisha B'Av a holiday? Because it's the time of the birth of Mashiach. So he asked a powerful question. What happens when the 9th of Av is on Shabbos? So when do we have Tisha B'Av? On Sunday. Do we say Tachanun on Sunday? No, why? But it's not the day of the birth of Mashiach. The birth of Mashiach is the 9th of Av. We're not even experiencing the sadness sometimes on the 9th of Av, when Tisha B'Av is on Shabbos. We actually have the sadness and the mourning on Sunday. And yet, we also don't say Tachanun. So he said, we have to say that no. The reason why we don't say Tachanun, the reason why it's a holiday, is not only because this is the day of the birth of Mashiach, but the experience of Tisha B'Av itself, the experience of the mourning, thinking of the burning of the temple, thinking of the exiles and the tragedies of Jewish history, that itself is also a holiday. On the one hand, it's terribly painful and sad, but on the other hand, besides it being terribly painful and sad, it's also a holiday, and as a holiday, it's not a time to say Tachanun. So what type of a holiday is this? What is this holiday of such terrible, terrible tragedy? So he suggests a whole series of possibilities. One of the possibilities that he suggests is based on a Gemara in Masechet Chagiga. The Gemara says in Tractate Chagiga that God cries in his innermost chambers. The verse says in Eicha, "Bimistarim tifke nafshi mipnei gevo." In the innermost places and the hidden chambers, my soul will weep because of pride. Says the Gemara, Makom Yeshu LaKadosh Baruch Hu, God is a place in heaven, Mistarim Shmo, it's called the hidden recesses, and God is crying there, Mipnei Ga'avasan Shel Yisrael, because of the pride of the Jewish people, Shenitla Mehen, that has been taken from us and given to the nations of the world. Gemara says, is that really true? Is God in heaven crying? The verse says, Oz v'chedva b'mkomo, joy and strength are in his place. God's happy. So how can we say that God is crying b'mistarim tifke nafshi mipnei gevo? So the Gemara answers, according to Rashi, there are two chambers, kan bebati gavai, kan bebati barai. There is an inner chamber and an outer chamber. In an inner chamber, God is crying because we don't have the temple. In the outer chamber, oz v'chedva b'mkomo. There's strength and there's joy in his place. But, says the Gemara, when it comes to mourning the temple on the 9th of Av, God calls out, and then even in the outer chambers, there is crying. So the 9th of Av is the day that the cries and the tears that the Almighty is shedding in the innermost chambers, always for the lack of the temple, on the 9th of Av, those tears go out from the innermost chambers, and they get out to the external chambers, to the outer chambers. There's an amazing idea. The Marsha and other Kabbalists point this out. There are 21 days between the 17th of Tammuz and the 9th of Av. 21 days, because the 9th of Av itself is a holiday. So 21 days. These 21 days correspond to the 21 days from Rosh Hashanah through Hoshana Rabbah. The 9th of Av corresponds to Shmini Atzeres. That's an amazing thing. The Zohar teaches that Shmini Atzeres is the greatest day of all of Tishrei. Of all the great achievements of Tishrei, Shmini Atzeres is our time alone with God. It's just us and Him. That's the most amazing experience. Is the experience of Shmini Atzeres. We know that on Sukkot we have to offer sacrifices in the Beit HaMikdash, 70 bulls to correspond to the 70 nations. On Shmini Atzeres we offer Par Echad, a single bull. Because the other nations aren't here. It's just us with God. As the Gemara says, the verse says, Nagila v'nismacha bach. We will rejoice and celebrate with you. Just us and you. We are alone with God. The Zohar calls it the day of Yichud Ashlim. Complete union with God. So one second. The ninth of Av corresponds to Shmini Atzeres. Shmini Atzeres is the day in Israel when they celebrate Simchas Torah. They dance with the Torah. They dance celebrating the Torah. That corresponds to the ninth of Av. Explains the Gra, something unbelievable. On Shmini Atzeres, it's just us and God celebrating each other's company. And on the ninth of Av, it's just us and God crying together. There's a tremendous closeness. God is weeping, and normally no one else is crying with him. In the external chambers, there's joy. But on the ninth of Av, we're sitting with the Almighty, and we're crying the same way he's crying. Shmini Atzeres, we're sitting with him, and we're celebrating with him. On the ninth of Av, we're alone with him, sitting, and we're crying with him. And that is a source, perhaps, of a verse in Koheles. We know in Koheles, Shlomo HaMelech lists 28 times. Eis laledes, a time to give birth. Eis lamus, a time to die. Eis lintoa, a time to plant. Eis lakor natua, a time to uproot. So there are 28 times. They all begin with the letter Lamed. Except for two times. Eis fod, eis rekod. A time to eulogize, a time to dance. Why is it time to eulogize, a time to dance, not beginning with the letter Lamed? So the Gaon of Vilna says the following. All the 28 times are a parallel. There's a time to plant and a different time to uproot. A time to give birth and a different time to unfortunately, to pass away. But in regards to Sfod, a eulogy is on earth. We're eulogizing that the soul left. But at the same time that we're eulogizing, in heaven they're dancing because the soul is going to his reward. So it's the same time, Ace Fod, the time of eulogy, is the same time, Ace Rekod, the time of dancing. So Ace Rekod, the time of dancing, of Shmini Atzeres, of dancing with the Sefer Torah, being alone with God, is the parallel on the other half of Eis Fod, the time of eulogy of Tisha B'Av. Tisha B'Av and Shmini Atzeres are linked. We are alone with God on Shmini Atzeres in celebration, and we are alone with God on Tisha B'Av in crying. And this is something very powerful. The sign that we are the Jewish people is that our fate is so different from all the other nations of the world. No other nation of the world has the difficulties that we have. No other nation goes through the same degree of animosity and hatred and persecution and tragedy. But also no nation has the ability to come back. Other nations, they have their moment and then they're off. The Greeks are never going to rule the world again. The Romans are not going to rule the world again. They had their moments and they're off the stage. But the Jewish people are coming back. We were off the stage for hundreds and hundreds of years, but we're coming back. And eventually we're going to have Mashiach, the full redemption. We're going to come back fully. The Jewish people come back because we are not like the other nations. We have a direct relationship with God. The fact that we can fall so low, lower than anybody else, is also the proof that we can rise higher than anybody else. So the Tisha B'Av, when we cry with God, alone, us and God, is the holiday, because it reminds us, also Shmini Atzeres, of singing alone with God, of being alone with God. It reminds us of the uniqueness of the Jewish people. I remember my father told me the story many times that when the Chinese took over Tibet, apparently the Dalai Lama wanted to meet with a group of rabbis because here the Buddhists were being expelled from Tibet and they wouldn't be able to have their temples and practice their religion in their homeland, and they were going to go into an exile, into a diaspora. So he asked the group of rabbis, teach me the secret of how you maintained your identity in a diaspora. And I remember my father telling me, I don't know what those rabbis said, but they couldn't have given him the secret. Because the reason why the Jews have maintained our identity in the diaspora is that we are unique. We have a unique relationship with God. We can be in a diaspora and still be loyal to God. It doesn't work for other nations. The French, when they come to America, they become American. The Americans go to England, they become English. No other nation is able to do this. So the uniqueness of the Jewish people is not replicable. So I don't know what they told him, but it's really not replicable. The Torah, the mitzvos, the halacha, no one else has this. No one else has this unique relationship. That's Tisha B'Av. On the one hand, it's all the diaspora and exile and difficulty and losing the Beis HaMikdash and the tragedy and the tears. But it's tears of us alone with God. And us alone with God, that's actually a holiday. Because that shows us we're also going to go really, really high. We're going to go very high to a place that no other nation can go. Because only we have this unique and special relationship with the Almighty. That was one idea that Rabbi Shapiro suggested. Another idea that he suggests is based on the word Nora, awesome. We know that the Kabbalists teach us that the core of the Beit HaMikdash is the Aron, is the Holy Ark, because Aron is the letters of the word Nora opposite. In other words, God displays His awesomeness, His tremendous presence, which creates great awe and reverence, Nora. So coming down from God to us, it's Nora. So when we look at it, we look at it the other way. We look at it Aleph, Resh, Vav, Nun, Aron. The Aron, the Ark, was the place that expressed God's attribute of Nora, of how awesome He is, how much respect He has. That's why the Rambam writes that the Ark is still in the Temple Mount. You know, the last week, the whole world is talking about the Temple Mount. I remember once years ago, Rabbi J. Marcus took us on a tour of the tunnels of the Temple Mount. And he showed us, right when you come into the tunnels, there's this huge, huge pile of concrete. Apparently some Israeli archaeologists were digging in these tunnels. And they got to a tunnel underneath the Temple Mount, from the Kotel to underneath the mountain. They started walking there, poking around, and the Arabs up on the mountain heard. They started rioting. So the Israeli government filled this area with 20,000 tons of concrete that no one should walk in these tunnels. What were they poking around for? They were looking for the Holy Ark. The Aron HaKodesh, according to the Rambam, is buried in the tunnels of the Temple Mount. And the Gemara in Shkalim also says this, that there is a tunnel underneath the Temple Mount that has the Aron HaKodesh. Why is it so necessary to have an Aron HaKodesh in the mountain? Why not have it somewhere else? So Rav Soloveitchik said that according to the Rambam, what makes the Beit HaMikdash have its sanctity is an Aron HaKodesh. The Holy Ark is what gives it its sanctity. And therefore, the Rambam says that since the space to this day has the sanctity of the temple, there must be an ark there. So the Rambam says there is an ark. It's just underneath the mountain. In the mountain, there is an ark because the ark creates the holiness of the Beit HaMikdash. The ark is the Nora, that which creates a sense of awe. The Gemara says in Masechet Yuma that when the second temple was built, we were led by an amazing group, Anshei Knesset HaGedola, the men of the great assembly. The Gemara says, why are they called Anshei Knesset HaGedola, the men of the great assembly? The Gemara says, Shehichziru Atara Liyoshna, They restored the luster of the crown. They brought the crown back to its old glory. What do you mean? What crown? Moshe Rabbeinu said, Hakel HaGadol HaGibor VaNora. God is great. God is mighty. God is Nora. God is awesome. But then came exile. We lost the temple. We were sent into exile. So Daniel said, Nachrim Mekarkrim Beheichalo. The Gentiles are running around in his holy temple. Aye Nora Osav. Where is his awesomeness? Where is the fear? Where is the awe? Look at what the Gentiles do on the holy mountain. The men of the great assembly, you know what their greatness was? They said, Adaraba, the exact opposite. Hain Nora Osav. The fact that the Gentiles are running around in the temple, that itself is the awesomeness of God. Explains Rav Moshe Shapiro so beautifully. The simple perspective says, if it's the holy temple which should be filled with awe, and the Gentiles are running around doing whatever they want there, there's no awe there, there's no respect. It's a terrible sacrilege and a desecration. Come the men of the great assembly, they say, no. If the Gentiles are running around, they have so much power, they can even run around in the temple. And yet, they can't wipe out the Jews. They want to. Think about what's going on in Israel, right? I mean, riots in Turkey, in Amman, in Egypt, in Malaysia. Over what? Over metal detectors, right? Metal detectors to the Temple Mount. There are riots in Malaysia. 8,000 people were demonstrating in Malaysia. How dare the Jews take away Al-Aqsa? Look at how much opposition we have. And they have so much more power than we do. There are many more Muslims, and they have much more money, and many more weapons, and many more soldiers. And that's just the Muslims. Imagine what you have when you go to the European anti-Semites and all the other haters of the Jews all over the world. There are millions and millions who want to wipe us out, and they have much more power than we have. And yet we're still here. That's the miracle of the temple. Adaraba, the exact opposite, the destruction, which shows the power of the enemy, is showing the miracle of God taking care of the Jewish people, even in front of such great enemies, who have so much power, he's still sustaining us. So that makes it a holiday. So to conclude, we learned that there are three ideas why Tisha B'Av is a holiday without Tachanun. One, it's a time when God loves us because he's about to separate from us. So every year he reminds himself of that love. He brings a hidden good. Mashiach is created on Tisha B'Av. A second idea, Tisha B'Av is the time when we are alone with God in his innermost chambers, crying with him, just like on Shmini Atzeres, we are alone with God, celebrating with him. The fact that we are alone with him is that we are so unique, and that makes it a holiday. And the third idea is we may have lost the building that created a sense of awe about God. But that very loss, which displays the tremendous strength that God has allowed our enemies to have, that strength and that loss displays how much love God has for us to sustain us, to allow us to survive despite the power those enemies have. That itself accomplishes the goal of the building. And that's what the men of the great assembly said. The fact of the exile is the reason to say that he's Hakel HaGadol HaGibor VaHaNora. He is awesome. Normally, Nora, awesome, is the Aron, is the Ark. The survival of the Jewish people is the Ark that creates the sense of awe and reverence. And that's what makes the day a holiday, showing us connected to God and God taking care of us. Okay, we can have a marriage. Thank you.